Hello and hi. Welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is John Berardo, who is the director and co-writer of a new horror thriller from Saban Films, Initiation, available May 7th at your favorite theater or digital destination. Hi, John. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
No problem. I was very curious to talk to you about this movie, and I'm glad that you co-wrote it because I do have questions. And full disclosure, when I started watching it, when it opened with a frat party, I began to mentally and emotionally prepare myself for disappointment. And I'm happy to say that that disappointment never manifested. So well done. Thank you.
Hell yes. Yeah. Well, you are very welcome because I've had that feeling too, and I'm sick of it.
So as the writer, as one of the writers, what was your approach to make sure that even though you dangled well-worn cliches and tropes in front of your potential viewers, that you still wanted to surprise them and stretch out that tension so that they would enjoy it?
Well, I think the process of writing this movie was such an evolution, and it went in so many phases. The origins of the film, the initial spark, started out of a class at USC about making media for social change. And the goal of the class was to make a movie that had a social issue that created a call to action. And so I made a movie about, you know, the opening scene of Scream with Facebook and a guy. And I learned a lot about what fear can do to your audience, especially when you do surprise them. And I, over time, tried to create a feature version of this script and was unsuccessful. And so I changed the environment up, made it a college movie, brought on Brian Frager to help with that because I went to USC with him. And as we were doing script readings, Lindsay Levanchi, she's an actress that I worked with for years. We went to UCLA together for undergrad. And in the theater school, I was directing and she was acting. And we had developed a relationship, working together for years because we just worked so well together. And she would come to our script readings and she really brought these characters to life in a way that I would have not been able to do, or Brian and I would not have been able to do alone. And we brought her on as a co-writer because she was really helping us steer these characters in a really realistic way that we wanted. And so I knew that if we were able to kind of give the audience a feel of familiarity with the genre and then be able to shift it and be smart about it and actually say something that the world needs to sort of hear in a way that they haven't heard before, and in a story that they think that they may know, but actually they don't, you know, that clicking moment where you said that you weren't, you know, that disappointment didn't manifest and you were surprised. I learned that on the short film. The entire short film, I was told, oh, you're making a scary movie. You're just making a scary movie. I don't see the social issue. But then when the reports came back and like 90% of the people changed their Facebook privacy settings after watching my movie, it proved that I surprised somebody. You're able to surprise them. And I just took that and I did everything I could to try to apply it to a feature film. And not just that, but also allow the script to evolve with time because, you know, sexual assault and the dynamics of how the media views it is very different from when the script began as it is now. And so allowing the Me Too movement to happen and the script evolving with it was very, very important as well. And, you know, what better genre than to, you know, create a message about sexual assault and misogyny and toxic masculinity than the slasher genre.
And on a college campus where that stuff seems to have taken permanent root, and with so many administrators turning a blind eye to it, putting it in that environment sort of hangs a lantern on how not enough is being done about that issue.
Exactly. Especially with social media and how social media goes into play, you know, and it's not like, you know, it's not just like posting an exclamation point on people's profiles. It's being explicitly horrible on people's pictures and the comments. And, you know, the internet's like the Wild West right now. You know, people are anonymous, and people can just go online and spit fire at somebody and not really realize the kind of damage that they're doing, or realize who those people's parents or friends or brother or sister or anybody is. You know, you don't know who you're dealing with and what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And so it's really important to get that message out in a way that hasn't been done before.
Well, I really appreciate how the technology, the ubiquitousness of mobile devices, smartphones, laptops, was just woven into the fabric, and how you see the messages going back and forth. It seemed pretty organic to the setting, and I thought that was smartly done and well done to make it easily readable for us who are sort of sitting at a remove from those messages and taking advantage of movie technology to make it easy for us to read these messages in the ether. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. I mean, that was important. How can you make a modern day movie without thinking about social media, not just from like a visual standpoint, but also from a story standpoint? You know, that organic nature totally came from the fact that when we were on set, if somebody used the phone, they were actually texting, actually posting on an account they created for their character. It was all done realistically. And then we were able to take, we were screen recording whatever phone was being used, and able to take the screen recordings, you know, by the take of the performance, and allow the visual effects team to create, you know, to take that language and create it into its own character now, and embed it into the movie in a way that, you know, wasn't just like a subtitle. And I saw a documentary years ago that Hitchcock had a comment on. He was supposed to create a map for the World War II Nazi invasion, and he said, you know, you don't need a bunch of stuff. Just make it simple. The audience will get it. They just need to see, you don't need names of the cities, just put dots, you know, in the states. And that just really affected me, because the starkness of the simplicity of what he created made it so terrifying and real. And that was something that I really wanted to carry into the social media. It's not about copying an interface that we're used to, because that's going to date the movie. You know, we don't want to make a movie that's going to be outdated in a year. So we really had to create our own interface in a way that people would be able to understand, obviously, as you said, while watching the movie, but also, like, it wouldn't stick out to them like, oh, they're texting. It just kind of became part of the world, which is how we live. And so I'm so happy that that came across, because we really, really made sure that, you know, to do it in a way that, you know, it sounds like people are responding to.
Yeah, and I'm a longtime horror fan, and seeing people who are making horror movies finally embracing modern day technology and figuring out how to weave it into a story, because the joke has been, you know, if people had cell phones, half these horror movies wouldn't have happened, because they just could have called for help. I'm like, well. And then you played with that. You guys played with that in such a beautiful way, with, you know, areas with low cell signal, Wi-Fi dead spots, low battery, you know, and
well, that's like, everyday life. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, hey, you can still have a very powerful brand new cell phone and still be hung out to dry. Just saying. So let's hope more people.
Exactly.
Take that idea and run with it, because what you guys did with it was amped up the tension, which was delightful.
Well, thank you. And you saying that it amped up the tension is actually, I have to say, that was also what was cool about it, was that, you know, about 50% of the messages that were actually typed out on set or in the script changed over time, because we found them to be opportunities to steer the audience's way of thinking, or to make them think something else, or to make them feel more, you know, more for a character. You know, like, well, instead of having Wes message somebody else here, let's have them message this person here and say sorry. You know, like that. And then that made us, you know, it gave us so much more to play with, you know, that we wouldn't have been able to do if we didn't have it.
Mm. And I want to avoid spoilers because this is a fun ride to go on. There were a couple of spots where the tension stretched on too long and it made me antsy, but sometimes that's a good thing. But the way this is shot, some of the angles when you're following the viewpoint of someone who's about to become a casualty was very Hitchcockian. Was that intentional?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Hitchcock obviously is a huge influence on the genre, but my DP and I are huge fans of The Moving Master. And The Moving Master is something that Wes Craven, I think, also really mastered himself. Especially, you know, the opening scene of Scream is the prime example of that. Mm-hmm. Because if you can orbit a camera around a character when they're going through something scary, it just puts the audience in the, without any cuts that direct the audience's attention, it just makes that moment so much scarier and more tense. And every single shot was storyboarded and overheaded, like down to a T, because we only had 16 days to make the movie. And to be able to effectively do it, we needed to have a very precise plan that we could, you know, be organic from, you know, while on set. And it really paid off because, you know, we were very specific, especially in the scenes of horror and the scenes with tension, to make sure that the camera work only aided to that.
Were there any other tricks that were inspired from older horror movies that you wanted to incorporate or did incorporate?
There are so many. I would say, obviously, The Mask was a huge homage to Scream and Friday the 13th. I read an article when I was younger about saying how the ghost face at Scream is actually a reflection of the characters looking back at themselves because they're so terrified and they scream. And so I thought I could take that idea and run with it and sort of reinvent it in sort of a modern day college, you know, EDM party vibe with The Mask, and, you know, also create the origins of a mask, which not a lot of horror movies do. They don't tell us where the mask came from, whereas we kind of get a sense of that from this movie. But, yeah, I would say really, like, Wes Craven was a huge inspiration for us. The shot where the girls are running through the hall at the end, I think it's like a 4-minute shot. Like, we had no takes or no cuts. And that was definitely one that reminded me of a scene in Scream 2 with Gale Weathers, you know, running through UCLA mm-hmm. at the very end in the college, you know, the college environment, you know, going from door to door, they're locked, they're not locked, you know, that obviously is an homage to that. But the movie's really just a medley of homages, you know, with the drill and the obviously just the tone of the college environment. We really wanted to create a callback to the slasher genre. And the casting of Deborah DeLisso from Slumber Party Massacre was just too perfect. So we really wanted to make a movie that, you know, not only slasher fans could identify with and see all the little things that we did, but also people who aren't necessarily slasher fans of horror movies, I think, can really still watch this movie, identify with the characters, and still, you know, be able to make it through the gory scenes.
I was going to ask about the mask, having it be mirrored while he's staring at the people he's targeted. I'm like, was that a way to force them to look at themselves?
Exactly. Yeah. the themes of facing your own demons was definitely incorporated with that, because that's the theme of toxic masculinity and really, you know, just wraps it up in a nice bow the way we wanted to.
Awesome. Well, John, I want to thank you for your time today, director and co-writer John Berardo from the movie Initiation, which is available from Saban Films on May 7th. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been super fun.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic, we've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's surveillance fatigue has you covered in every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, from heroic alien pets waiting for their families to herds of literal Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all at escapepod.org. So buckle up, because it's story time.
Hi guys, this is Tom Allison, and I play Tree on Killjoys, and you're listening to A Slice of Sci-Fi.
And again, the movie is Initiation, out from Saban Films on demand on digital and in theaters May 7th. You should check it out. It's definitely a creative use of modern day technology in a campus horror film. And there are a few twists in there, a few, shall we say, red herrings dangled at the appropriate points that serve to distract from other potential suspects. And it was very nicely done, very fun, I thought. So are you looking forward to more horror movies that step into this modern media age of 24/7 instant news, social media announcements, and faux pas and repercussions, and have it be seamless as it's part of the movie story, just like it's part of the story of our lives? You've got Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all over the place. And seeing a movie that smartly incorporates it without trying to focus on what's on the screen of somebody's phone in their hand while they're holding it is such a relief. Because unless you have a 50 or 60 inch TV screen, you're not going to see that when you're watching at home. You're not going to be able to read it. It's not on the screen long enough for you to read it. Anyway, that's just one pet peeve I have with a few movies that incorporated technology over the past 5 or so years. But hopefully we're moving past it. We're moving past it. We are moving past it. Thank you. Anyway, what are your thoughts? Send me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. Or ask on Twitter, @sliceofscifi. I am happy to entertain questions over there. If you don't feel like coming to the website to leave a comment or question, which is sliceofscifi.com, you can leave a question on this interview and so many others. Start up a conversation, because sometimes I get bored and I need a break from doom scrolling on Twitter every now and then. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. And if you're listening on Apple or on Stitcher, or if you're a member of Podchaser, please leave us a review or a rating. Let people know you are enjoying this show, and maybe they should check it out for themselves. Yes, I have neglected our YouTube channel for a little while. I'm working on that. But if you go to youtube.com/sliceofscifi, you can check out many of the fun videos we have done. We have done interviews, we have done reviews, and when movie theaters start opening up and people can safely attend again, I'm sure Noah and Darren will be jumping on those video reviews once again. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently helping to support the efforts here of the Slice of Sci-Fi universe, the podcast Slice of Sci-Fi, Writers After Dark, the archives of Babylon Podcast and Charlie Jade. All of those stay online with your support and assistance, and for that, I am thankful. If you'd like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Pick a tier, any tier. All levels of Patreon patrons will be eligible for perks if they so desire. Every month I pick a winning email address out of the hat, and that person can choose from a book, either an advanced copy or a finished copy, or a Blu-ray, a DVD, a 4K disc that I happen to have around here, because I get all sorts of review materials and I'm running out of space to keep it all. So the loyal Slice of Sci-Fi listeners and supporters get first dibs on the swag. That's my way of saying thank you to you. And if you'd prefer just to make a donation every now and then, instead of committing to a monthly pledge, the link to use is paypal.me/sci-fi-summer. And that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.